Hi everyone. I'm going to be reading from the Jesus Trilogy today, and I chose a passage, chapters 5 and 6 actually, from the first book in the trilogy, which is Choice and Will. So we're going to be diving into the subject of choice, which is often a confusing topic in non-dual circles. It's not always very clear to people. When non-dual teachers speak about there is no chooser or there's no choosing and that kind of thing. So this book attempts to clarify that to some extent. And I would summarize this book, Choice and Will. I would summarize the idea or a nugget from it as when we are unconscious, that is, when we're really merged with the egoic mind and our false self, and we're really believing the mind and we believe we are the false self, then our conditioning is pretty much running us. And although we have choices within that conditioning, you could say we don't have a lot of choice. We don't really have choice because it's a choice between conditioning. We are not that far from animals, just being responsive to our software, to our conditioning, and not really making a conscious choice. And then we begin to awaken to our true nature, and we begin to see the conditioning for what it is. And then it's possible to choose something that is outside of the conditioning, possibly something that thy will is choosing. And so there's a point in between the conditioned life of living as the false self and full enlightenment, where you're following thy will and in the flow pretty much most of the time. There's an in-between place that we're going to be talking about, where your true self is waking up within you, and there is a sense of choice and a sense of needing to choose either the conditioning or thy will, to choose between those two things. And this is a very important point in people's evolution, in their spiritual evolution. They begin to wake up out of the egoic mind, out of the false self, and see the false self, and see the egoic mind. And then there is some choice about whether you'll follow that conditioning, or whether you will drop into the present moment and into the flow and be a divine instrument and be in thy will. And so that's the progress. We move from being merged with the false self and in a sense not having a choice because our conditioning is choosing. Then we move into an in-between place where we're waking up and we're beginning to make a conscious choice about what we will do next. And then we drop into a place where our conditioning is no longer compelling at all. And so we're not really having to choose against it. And so then all that's left is thy will. And the experience of thy will isn't there either, because a choice requires choosing between two things. And if you're only attentive to thy will, and for the most part living as thy will, it's going to be an experience of there being no chooser, nothing to choose, because everything's just happening, being chosen, being in the flow, just naturally. You're not struggling with, oh, what should I choose? Do I choose this or that? So that's where this idea of there's no chooser comes from in non-dual circles, is that there's no chooser when you're totally unconscious, and there's no chooser when you're fully enlightened. But as ACIM points out, which I found very interesting because I wasn't familiar enough with ACIM to even know that they taught this. But what I liked about it when I ran across, I read a book by John, now I'm forgetting his name, and John Mundy, thank you. And I was so pleased to see the emphasis on choice there, that this is we do have that power. Our choice is very important. And there is a point in our evolution, and that's what I'm talking about today. That's what I will be reading about today, where choosing is very important. And I think that's where a lot of people who are listening to this and who are in non-dual circles and going to teachers and who are awakening, they're at this place where their true self is awakening to itself. And in that place, it is imperative that you see that you do have a choice to choose presence, to choose dropping into the flow, being in your body and senses, being in the here and now instead of the egoic mind, the thought stream, which takes you into the false self's virtual reality. Okay, so chapter 5, the chooser. What awakens from the illusion of the false self is the true self, although the true self was never asleep. This is a paradox and where words fall short. Something has always been awake and has never slept. Consciousness, your true nature. And yet the human drama is of one who has fallen asleep to the truth and then awakens to it. Both are true and both have been happening simultaneously. So I think this is a very nice clarification. There's so much in life that is paradoxical. The mind thinks in terms of black and white, this is true, so this can't be true. But in reality, in spiritual reality, we have paradox where both is true. There appears to be a self here who is asleep to itself, who awakens, and yet there has that self who is awakening has always been awake, but it's a different stage in the divine self's evolution. It is coming forward. It's coming to the forefront in a way that it's never been before. I will refer to the self that awakens or is awakening as the chooser, because it is capable of choosing more consciously than before. However, all along, this chooser was choosing at least some of the time. What changes after the illusion of the false self is thoroughly seen through is that you experience yourself as the chooser instead of the false self. It is an experience of being outside the mind and noticing your thoughts, rather than feeling like you are the one thinking your thoughts. Awakening is a waking up out of the mind. So you stop believing that you're the one thinking your thoughts, and you start to experience yourself as the one who is capable of witnessing or observing the thoughts, and therefore evaluating them and making a choice around them. This is a very important step along the way to enlightenment and makes happiness and peace much more accessible. And yet conditioning remains that needs to be seen through. Choices have to be made, and there is a new way of being in the world to get used to. If you are no longer the false self and, for the most part, no longer being driven by its desires and fears, then how do you move in the world? What moves you? So this is the question that many people who awaken out of the ego are asking themselves or are experiencing. It's like, how do I move in the world now? If my thoughts aren't what are propelling and compelling me, what is? How do I move in the world? Many people experience a dropping away of motivation at this stage. But what actually drops away are the ego's goals and the drive to achieve them, not motivation itself. When the ego's goals no longer seem attractive, motivation may seem to have disappeared, but it is still there. It just doesn't look or feel like motivation looked and felt before. After awakening, often the only motivation is to just be. Just being may seem like doing nothing, and may seem absent of motivation, since that's how the ego would view it. But just being is actually doing something. It's just not something the ego would choose to do. The being that you are loves to just be and just experience whatever it is experiencing. It is fascinated by things the ego wouldn't consider at all. The being that you are finds everything wondrous and delightful. It is easily pleased and content. To be happy, your being doesn't need the flash, glamour, activity, and excitement that the ego needs. Just being and experiencing are enough. Once adjustments to this new state of greater awakeness have been made, you will be drawn again to being more active in the world, but your motivation will come from something other than the small will. The small will is what this book has been calling, it refers to the ego's will. The small will is the will of the small self, the false self, the egoic self. It will come from a greater will, which moves you, not with thoughts, but in other ways. And that greater will, of course, is what we generally call thy will. And it is important to note that the greater will does not move us with thoughts in our head. At least not the voice in our head, the thought stream, that egoic voice. Just because the ego has lost control and fallen into the background doesn't mean the egoic commentary in your head ceases, however. The programming is still there, and the false self still exists and has some power to hook you back into believing it. But when you do get hooked, the experience of identification is different than before, because now you are more aware. So those who have awakened out of the ego do have this very experience. They may still identify with conditioning at times, but it won't be for as long, and there won't be as much suffering entailed, because there is more awareness around the fact that you've identified. So whereas in the egoic state of consciousness, we get stuck and lost in the morass of our thoughts and we can't see our way clear from them. Once we've awakened out of the egoic mind and we find ourselves believing a particular conditioned thought, there is always a certain awareness that we know ourselves to be that can observe the fact that we identified. And that awareness then is able to pull us out of that identification much more easily and efficiently. And that awareness is also what heals the conditioning ultimately and much more quickly than before awakening. The chooser obviously doesn't choose to identify with conditioning. That just happens. As conditioning surfaces from the unconscious mind, it commands attention for a while and may even produce feelings. But unlike before awakening, the chooser is too awake to not notice that identification. And once the chooser becomes aware of identification, the chooser can choose to do something about it. Before, when your will was identical with the small will, the will was used to choose between conflicting desires or beliefs, not to free yourself from the conditioning altogether. The choice was between being thin or eating a piece of cake, for example, which are conflicting egoic desires. Now the choice is between staying identified with the ego or conditioning or not staying identified with it. So you can see that's a really big difference. And so I'm going to repeat this sentence that says it so well. Before, when your will was identical with the small will, the will was used to choose between conflicting desires or beliefs, not to free yourself from conditioning altogether. The choice was between being thin or eating a piece of cake, for example. So that example is an example of two condition choices of, I want to be thin, I want to eat a piece of cake. So you're just choosing within the conditioning when your will is identical to the small will. You're just choosing between your conditioning. When you awaken on the end, it says, now the choice is between staying identified with the ego or not staying identified with it. You see what a big leap that is. So now you have the capacity, once when you're identified with something, to see that you're identified with something and to choose to stay identified with it or not. That is a sea change. That's why awakening is such a life-changing event, because you've moved to the place of being able to choose outside of the conditioning. You're able to see the conditioning and make a different choice. So many people in this world are not at the stage where they can do that, or they rarely do that. So, you know, our world would be a really different place if more people were able to be objective about their conditioning and see that they had a choice around it. That's freedom. Freedom is seeing that you have a choice. And by freedom, I mean liberation, spiritual freedom, freedom from suffering. The chooser wants something quite outside what the small will wants. In fact, the chooser wants something the small will doesn't want at all. The chooser wants freedom from the suffering caused by the incessant desires of the small will. It wants freedom to simply enjoy life just as it is. Freedom from the ego's dissatisfaction and sense that something is missing or not right and needs changing. This deep desire for freedom comes from beyond the ego and drives human evolution forward. This desire and the will that supports it are very different from the ego's desires and will. The ego's desires, which fuel the small will, are based on conditioned ideas and the belief that something essential to happiness is lacking, which is not true. The false self is a self that feels lacking. It is trying to get or become something that it believes is necessary for happiness. The desires that fuel the small will are based on false presumptions. Nothing is actually lacking. Only the belief that something is lacking makes it seem so. Attaining the ego's desires will never satisfy that sense of lack anyway, because the ego will continue to manufacture that sense of lack regardless of what is attained. So I'm going to read that significant sentence again too, because this belief is what holds the illusion in place and holds the false self in place. Nothing is actually lacking. Only the belief that something is lacking makes it seem so. On the other hand, the greater will, which the chooser draws upon, is based on deeper desires and drives that, although very real and true, are more subtle and less tangible than the desires, feelings, and drives of the ego. As a result, the greater will cannot be understood by the mind and is therefore not felt to be real by the mind. So these deeper desires are often overlooked or disregarded by the mind. What powers the greater will is not lack, but the desire to live in joy, peace, and love, which is the drive for enlightenment. This drive is at the heart of life and at the heart of everyone. Joy, peace, and love are what everyone is seeking. How wonderful it is that these are what propel life and what evolution ultimately delivers. How does the greater will bring about joy, peace, and love? It does this by inspiring you to move in ways that create more joy, peace, and love. just as the small will creates conflict, stress, and suffering by moving you in ways that create conflict, stress, and suffering, the greater will moves you in ways that create joy, peace, and love. You know whether you're aligned with the small will or the greater will by the results. What you choose is what you get. When you do not realize that you are choosing or what you are choosing, you get what the ego wants and what it creates, because the programming will rule. So when you do not realize that you're choosing or what you're choosing, you get the programming. That's the default. The default is an unconscious place where the conditioning, the programming, the software just takes over. However, when you are conscious of choosing and conscious of what you are choosing, you naturally choose what brings joy, peace, and love. When the ego is no longer choosing, all that's left is what chooses to move in a way that produces joy, love, and peace rather than suffering. The choice is made for you by your true nature, by the greater will. Then thy will be done. Before thy will is what determines your every choice, there is an in-between stage in which you experience yourself as having to choose between the small will and the greater will, and when the programming still chooses at times. Nevertheless, something very important has shifted since you were at the mercy of your programming. Now you are aware of when you have become identified. You are aware of when you have let the programming choose. This may not seem like a big shift, since you still suffer at times from getting hooked by the old programming. But this is vastly different from being at the mercy of your conditioning when your free will was subsumed by the small will. The difference is that now you are in a position of being able to choose to stay awake or fall back to sleep. There is no wrong choice, as it is perfectly acceptable to fall back to sleep, to re-identify with your programming if you choose. Life is so benevolent that it allows you a choice. Now that you know yourself as the chooser, it's much more difficult to ignore or go against the truth you've seen. It is quite painful to go back to sleep once you have experienced what it's like to be awake. The knowledge of what this is like, inspires you to continue to choose to stay awake. And so just as you might briefly fall asleep after you first awaken in the morning, you might fall asleep from time to time before you're more fully awakened. But one thing is certain, you will fully awaken at some point, because it is time. You have already seen the light of day. Some people just have a longer period of drowsiness than others. Some conditioned beliefs have staying power and still feel very true even after awakening, even though you know they aren't true. Something deep within you still believes that belief. And so this misunderstanding, this mistaken belief, will have to be addressed through some kind of healing. The most difficult conditioning to overcome is that which is formed in early childhood and in other lifetimes. Many of these issues will need some kind of guide, such as a therapist or a healer, to assist you in working through them. While less emotionally charged beliefs can probably be worked through on your own by bringing your loving and compassionate awareness to them and investigating them until they relax their hold. Much has already been written about how to do this healing work by this author and others, so I will not be much more explicit here. The point is, as long as you have unhealed conditioning, which is true of nearly everyone, it will pull you into identification with the false self to some extent. Fortunately, once you know that you are not the false self, healing conditioning is much easier to do, because you are more able to be aware of the false self's mistaken beliefs and negative feelings. Accept them and bring compassion to them. What heals conditioning are these three qualities of attention: awareness, acceptance, and compassion. Since identifying with conditioning can still happen without any conscious choice on your part, even after awakening, your only choice is what you do once you find yourself hooked by a mistaken belief or negative feeling. If you don't consciously choose to do something when you first get hooked, then the old programs will probably take over, and you will find yourself even more deeply identified. How you relate to conditioning once you get hooked will either help it to dissolve or reinforce it. If you react to or act out a feeling or a thought, such as a story or judgment, the way you used to, then that thought or feeling will be reinforced and is guaranteed to return, perhaps even stronger. On the other hand, if you are able to realize that you are hooked, then you can choose to relate to that thought or feeling differently than you have in the past. Here's how to relate to a story or some other thought or feeling that you're identified with. First, simply notice what you're experiencing. What is the experience of the story or feeling like in your body, both physically and energetically? Where do you feel it? What does it feel like? Tight, dark, hollow, heavy, sharp, cool, hot? Let the sensations that are there be there and stay with them for a few moments. Let yourself feel them fully without any mental commentary. Next, give the complex of sensations a name. Address it, befriend it, and get to know it. Welcome sadness or pain, tightness, smallness, shame, fear, or whatever. There is room for you here. Why have you come? And what have you to say? Then listen to the feeling or story with your whole being. Don't try to analyze it or figure it out with your mind. Just listen and see if you can discover from the feeling or story what thoughts or beliefs lie beneath it. An intuition might arise about this. If not, just continue to allow the sensations to be present. Next, notice what else is present besides the feeling or story. Is acceptance here? Love? Compassion? Judgment? Desire? Beauty? Other sensations? Other feelings? Gratitude? Peace? So many things can be present in one moment. Notice everything and let everything be as it is. So this instruction is, it works because it helps you to zoom out from the narrowed down belief that's been held or the feeling that's being experienced by asking the question, what else is here besides that feeling that grabbed you or that belief that grabbed you? What else is here? That helps consciousness to zoom out and loosen the contraction so you're no longer contracted into feeling that that belief and feeling is so real and is everything that is existing in this moment. Notice what else is existing in this moment by asking that question and looking, what else is here? And noticing that so much else is here. Allow and drink in the rich composite of experience that is the present moment. Doing this helps put the story or feeling in perspective. The story or feeling is just one of so many things present in the moment, and you are so much more than any of those things. You are the marvelous, gracious presence that is experiencing it all and in love with it all. In acknowledging and accepting everything that is present in a particular moment in this way, you naturally move into alignment with your loving nature, which is at peace with life just as it is. Making such choices moves you from identification and suffering to disidentification and freedom from suffering. Although this process may need to be repeated many times and may take some time, these are the kinds of choices that will help you heal your conditioning rather than be victimized by it. There's one other choice you can make when you're caught in conditioning, especially when you're suffering and struggling with false beliefs and difficult feelings. Pray. Every prayer for assistance is heard and answered. Do not hesitate to call for help from me and from others who exist to serve you. Never doubt that you are loved and cared for in every moment of your life. You are never alone, and help is always available. But you must choose to ask. We do not interfere with your free will by imposing help that is not asked for. We respect your choice to hold yourself apart from us and rejoice when you turn to us for assistance. Know this and be at peace. Chapter 6, Nothing to Choose. Choosing presupposes two or more things to choose from. When there are not two or more choices, then there is nothing to choose. In other words, when there is only one viable choice, what is there to choose? This one choice is often called a choiceless choice. The choiceless choice is what God wants, or you could say, what life wants. When you experience yourself as the chooser, you experience the possibility of two choices in any moment: what the small will would choose, or what the great will, greater will, or life is choosing. But when the small will is no longer at play, that is, when the ego has lost its power, then all that is left is the greater will. When only the greater will remains, then that is not experienced so much as will, but as just what is unfolding naturally in the moment. This sweet and innocent unfolding of life is a reflection of the greater will. The sense of there being nothing to choose is often described as going with the flow of life, since life is constantly on the move. Since life is constantly on the move, going with the flow means going in the direction that life is already moving. This flow or direction is also called the Tao. When the small will wants to go in some other direction than the flow, that desire creates the experience of needing to choose between the direction or the flow, between that direction or the flow. The experience of being so in the flow that there is no longer a need to choose is also described as there being no one to choose. The chooser has disappeared because there is nothing to choose between. But the chooser doesn't completely disappear until the small will drops away and ceases to have any power. Until then, the experience of having to choose and the sense of there being a chooser remains. When the false self and its will are no longer experienced as who you are and what you want, and this is realized deeply and thoroughly, you are left with an experience of no self, no one to choose. In the absence of a self, all there is consciousness, living and breathing as life itself, one united and indivisible being, God, manifesting as you and everything else. This is not like any self you have ever experienced before. So the reason that the divine self, or this consciousness that you truly are, is talked about as no self is that because it doesn't have a center anymore. The false self seems to be centered on the body, mind, and the mind and one's thoughts. And so there seems to be a self there because there's a center, and it seems like who you are is contained in the body. But the experience of no self is the experience of pure consciousness that has no boundaries and is not contained within any one thing, but exists within everything and is the same within me and you and everywhere else. So it has no point of locus. So there's no self, there's no locator point. And so it's just oneness. Although the basic software still runs the body-mind as needed, someone who's experiencing no self doesn't refer to conditioning for how to behave or move. He or she is moved by the only will that is left, by life. That person takes his or her cue from life as life is showing up moment to moment and moves accordingly. So when you're no longer being driven by the thoughts in your head, what's left is to just notice how life is naturally moving in the moment. That is thy will. Whatever is actually happening in reality is life happening, is thy will. Living this way may sound impossible and impractical, but I can assure you that this is how you are meant to live and how all of humanity will live in the future. The future of the human race is an enlightened humanity. Few live this way now, but more and more will be living like this before long, because it is time for humanity to make a leap forward in its evolution. Many of you are the harbingers of this great shift in consciousness. Will underlies all of creation, which itself is an act of will. Life is directed by divine intention, divine will. There is method to this miraculous madness. If what is behind life is anything, it is intelligent. This must be apparent to you. An incomprehensible intelligence is at the helm, and it is steered by will and intention. Intention for what? How can this even be known? We can make certain assumptions about this intelligence based on what divine will has already accomplished through its creations. This intelligence must have an intention to experience, learn, and evolve, since that is obviously going on. It must also have an intention to create, since that is also going on. And it must have an intention to be challenged, since that too is woven into the fabric of life. These are all things that God could not experience without willing creation into existence and designing it specifically to provide these things. With creation comes the potential to experience, learn, evolve, create, and be challenged. None of this could have been experienced before creation existed. In my most recent book by Jesus called All Grace, there are chapters about God and God's creation and the design, the perfect design, and about grace. So there's a lot more. A whole book was written that goes more in depth about this subject of God and God's intention and thy will moving in the world, because that is what grace is. Grace is thy will moving in the world. The great sages of India called this act of divine creation Leela, which means play. Creation is how God takes on various roles and guises, explores an array of choices and desires, challenges himself, herself, and evolves. God loves doing all these things just as you do. As above, so below. You are God playing at being a human being. Life is being intelligently directed by divine will. The ego doesn't share this perspective, however, but quite the opposite one. The ego feels tossed to and fro by a dangerous and likely meaningless universe, forever at the mercy of misfortune and unjust fate. The ego's perspective is most certainly a recipe for suffering. If you believe this about life, you will feel the way your ego does, victimized, frightened, angry, inadequate, vulnerable, and justified in looking out for number one. The ego's beliefs and feelings invariably lead to harmful, selfish, and hurtful actions, which create the painful dog-eat-dog reality that the ego assumes reality to be. The ego's belief that this is a misbegotten world is reinforced, and the cycle continues. Perception creates reality, or at the very least, one's experience of reality. Life is so benevolent that it allows human beings to have whatever experiences they choose to create, even painful ones. Although God designed life to have challenges, including the challenge of having an ego, God does not create painful experiences. People create pain out of the challenges they are given by their attitude toward them, which is shaped by the stories they tell themselves. And God allows people to do that. Fortunately, the ego's perceptions of reality are not the truth, which people are bound to discover thanks to the gift of suffering. With every challenge, you are asked to rise above and move beyond the distorted perceptions of your software, which create a painful and conflict-ridden experience of reality. The software is corrupt. Discovering this is the first step in overcoming the difficulties and suffering caused by believing the lies fabricated by the software. Dispelling these illusions is no small task. This is where inquiry comes in. Inquiry is a method that uses the mind, your intelligence, to see through the illusions and falsehoods cast by the aspect of the mind that has taken on an identity as you. This aspect of the mind is often called the egoic mind because it is essentially an expression of the ego in your conditioning of your software. I have been referring to the egoic mind as the thoughts that run through your mind or the false self. The egoic mind could also be described as the software that has taken on a voice and an identity and speaks to you in your own mind as if it is you or an authority figure, a guide, a friend, a mentor, a parent, a judge, or some other persona. Through inquiry, you probe, who is it that has this judgment, belief, opinion, feeling, desire, hope, dream, memory, or story? Who is this I? You sit with this question and take some time to look for the I. When you look for the thinker of a thought, you cannot find it. The self that seems to be you doesn't exist. That sense of you is created by a string of thoughts, all of which can be seen to have arisen on their own, unbidden and not chosen by you. The self that seems like you is literally generated by thoughts that come out of nowhere. The computer mind spits out thoughts. You feel like they are yours, and so you become caught in the illusion of the false self. Another very basic but very important inquiry is simply asking if a thought is true. All this requires is turning your ability to objectively observe, which is an aspect of your intelligence and also of intelligence, onto your egoic mind. I'm going to just repeat that sentence so it's a little bit clearer. All this requires is turning your ability to objectively observe, which is an aspect of your intelligence and also of intelligence, onto your egoic mind. When you do this, you discover quite quickly that most of the thoughts that run through your mind are not true or are true only some of the time. Although it's easy enough to discover the truth about your thoughts, you have to be willing to look. Inquiry is making the choice to look and see what is true, rather than hide your head in the sand and carry on as usual. Besides willingness or will, Looking in this way takes courage and a deep curiosity about the truth, not only about a specific thought, but also about thoughts in general. Is this massive computer programming really what you want to base your life and well-being on? The will to look deeply into what is true and the courage and curiosity to do this doesn't come from the ego, but from who you are. And it comes when it is time to awaken. There is no mistake in not having investigated your thoughts sooner. Everything unfolds in its own time. The will to look and investigate comes when a person is ready to awaken from the illusion of being a suffering self. After you experience through inquiry that the self that you thought you were doesn't exist except as thoughts, another inquiry you can do, which will lead to an experience of your true self, is who is it that is aware of this judgment, belief, opinion, feeling, desire, hope, dream, memory, or story? That question drops you immediately into the experience of yourself as awareness. What you really are is not the thinker of the thoughts, but what is aware of the thoughts. That aware presence is who you really are. So again, that question is, who is it that is aware of this judgment, belief, opinion, feeling, desire, hope, dream, memory, or story? Who is it that is aware of it? That's who you are. Not the one who feels the judgment, who believes the judgment, not the one who had the judgment. You know, people say, oh, I have this judgment about so-and-so. Your false self has the judgment, but who you really are is aware of the false self that has the judgment. I mention inquiry because it is key in unraveling the illusion around who you are. This type of inquiry is essential before you can begin to see reality from a clear, true perspective, one not muddied by the ego's mistaken assumptions and misperceptions. Until you experience your true self for yourself, what I or others say about who you really are will remain theoretical and not that believable. Because you cannot believe the truth and what the ego believes simultaneously. Since these perspectives are mutually exclusive, you have to see through the ego's lies to some extent before you experience the truth. Inquiry helps you do that. Letting go of the ego's perceptions is not so easy. It can be scary. Inquiry leads to a radical paradigm shift, and people do not easily choose to shake up their beliefs by asking such deep questions. Only those who are ready for this leap in consciousness will venture to do inquiry. The ego has its way of keeping people in its grip, and denial and fear are its strongest allies. So I can tell you that life is good and trustworthy, and that it is unfolding perfectly. But will you believe this? Will this be enough for you to know this? Unfortunately, I cannot make you feel and know this truth just by saying it. You must be willing to do these inquiries and make this leap of faith yourself. This leap of faith is essentially a choice, a very important one. Once you choose to believe a new, truer, and more positive version of life, then that will become your experience of reality. Beliefs are that powerful. If you do not already have beliefs that create a positive reality, one free of suffering, then you must choose to believe new beliefs. At a certain point, that is the only choice left, because you see that the only other option is to go back to suffering. This point is like standing on a precipice with your old life behind you and a new one waiting for you, if only you step off the cliff. Try on the beliefs presented here and see how they feel. Let your heart be your guide. Do these beliefs bring more happiness, harmony, peace, prosperity, and love into your life or not? Are the beliefs you have now working for you? Do they bring you what you really want? If not, you have nothing to lose in discarding them. Once you choose to believe that life is good and trustworthy, you drop into the flow and the chooser disappears because there is no longer any inner conflict. This is the last choice. You choose to believe the truth about life. Then you don't have to choose again because you become the truth, the light. When your beliefs are aligned with the truth, they are like a key that unlocks the great beauty of your being, and the door to a new world opens for you. Finally, you are no longer at odds with yourself. There is only one direction to move in. When you choose to believe the truth about life, all other choices drop away, and you find yourself in harmony with all of life. All that is left is what is unfolding in this moment, and that is enough. More than enough. It is heaven on earth. And that is the end of this chapter. I really enjoyed this chapter. I really enjoyed reading it to you. I'm not sure what else to say in the next 5 minutes. I'll just sit here a moment. I think one of the important points is that it takes courage to make a choice. The path of least resistance is always to just follow along with what we've always done in the past, to go with the programming, to go with other people's programming, to do what is easiest. The programming is always easiest. And yet, the irony or the paradox is that the flow is definitely the easiest way to live. So, going with the easiest choice will not bring you an easy life. Going with the true choice will bring you ease and harmony and the best life, the most fulfilling life, the life you're meant to live. That choice is not the easiest choice, but it brings you the best result. So it takes courage, it takes inner strength, it takes will, the willingness to make another choice, the willingness to see the truth, to know the truth, to stay with the truth moment to moment, because the choice to be with the truth has to be made in every moment. You know, I often say if only we had to make that choice once, right? We'd all be enlightened. But in every moment, there is a choice to be made, at least for most of us who are not fully enlightened and have dropped into that choiceless place of complete alignment with thy will. Most of us are in the place where in every moment we need to make a choice, a conscious choice about where we put our attention. Are we going to give it back to the programming, do the easy thing, do what everyone else is doing, and be miserable? Or are we going to do what takes a little more effort, a little more consciousness, a little more awareness, and make the more courageous choice that will bring about the life that we're meant to live, and that will help pull others into that place? We have a duty not just for our own happiness, but to the happiness of others, to be true to ourself with a capital S. Be true to that self. Because in being true to that self, we can help others to be true to their self. Because right now what's happening is that people have a hard time being true to the truth, because there is so much pull to being like everybody else and not being different, and to being, you know, being the same and continuing in the same way. So we need to find courage. We need to find that strength within. And that's developed as we progress spiritually. It is naturally developed, but it helps to, for us to consciously make that intention for that help to choose rightly. Because we will receive help when we pray for help, and when we make that intention to choose in each moment the truth. Okay, well, you never know. I can always fill up a few minutes, can't I? It always surprises me. All right, well, thank you for being here, and I will say goodbye then and pass the mic or the spotlight over to Regina.